Hey, good morning, everybody. Today's daf is B'Mitzia Daf Lamed Hey. We left off on the top of Daf Lamed Hey, Amar Aleph. We are at Amar Rava, the last one on the second line of Daf Lamed Hey, Amar Aleph. Today's shiur is sponsored by Dr. David Lander, in honor of his wife and children, and Lila Nishmas, his mother, Golda Basimcha, La Shalom, Nisham Shem, and Aliyah. Also by Daniel Sadian for the success of Klal Yisrael in these times, and Atzlacha for our soldiers and our captives should all return home safely. And also by Rabbi Bruckheimer, in honor of the recent birth of a great granddaughter to Avital and Eli Pressburger of Karmel Gad. Mazel tov to the Bruckheimer and Pressburger family. We thank all of the sponsors very, very much for the sponsorship. So what we're going to discuss today is the following. We left off yesterday with a kasha on Rav Huna. If you recall, Rav Huna was one that said that even when a shomer does not have to take a shavua, he at least has to take a shavua that he's not still holding on to the item, because we're choshish that maybe he just wanted to buy it and he knew it wasn't for sale, so he'll just make some sort of taina where he'll be able to pay for it, and then he'll just keep it for himself. So even if he's not taking a shavua, at least he has to take a shavua that he's not holding on to the item. So we challenged Rav Huna yesterday from a brisa. Now the Gemara is going to give three answers to that challenge to Rav Huna, and then the Gemara is going to come up with yet another challenge to Rav Huna. And then the next sugya, the Gemara is going to talk about, going to bring a maisa, maisa shahaya, but through the discussion of maisa shahaya, it's going to bring up the discussion of whether shuma hadar. Shuma hadar means that if Reuven owes Shimon money and he doesn't have any cash, so we have to assess the value of one of Reuven's properties and we give that property to Shimon. Well, when Reuven does have the item that he actually owes Shimon, if let's say he comes up with the money or the item that he actually owes Shimon, can he ask for his land back? Can he get his house back and say, look, I'll give you the money, just give me, it was my house, it was my property, it was my ancestral property, I would like the land back, so can you get that back? That's the discussion, whether Shuma Hadar or Shuma Lo Hadar. The Gemara is going to discuss maybe there's a time limit on that. Maybe if I just gave it to you yesterday, you have to give it back to me. But if I gave it to you 10 years ago, you don't have to give it back to me. So discussion about that. And then the Gemara is going to say, even if you assume Shuma Hadar, there are four cases where there's a further discussion whether Shuma Hadar in those cases. So we come up with four different cases where even if you assume normally Shuma Hadar, maybe those are exceptions. Maybe they are, maybe they aren't. And then the Mishnah on Amud Beis is going to talk about what the responsibilities are if a socher lends out the para to somebody else. So someone rents an animal, and instead of keeping the animal to use for himself, as a socher is supposed to do, he lends it out to somebody else, and it dies while it's in the possession of the person who's borrowing it from the socher. Now we know the chiyuvim of a shoel are greater than the chiyuvim of a socher. So you can imagine a case where the shoel owes money to the socher, but the socher doesn't owe any money to the original bailim. So is that a thing? Can a socher make money off of the deal? Because it gets the animal dies when it's by the shoel, and the shoel has to pay him, but he doesn't have to turn around and pay the original bailim. So that's going to be a discussion in the Mishnah. And then the Mishnah is going to discuss, then the Gemara is going to discuss, maybe you have an even crazier case. Maybe you could have a case where I rent an animal from you, and through the series of agreements that we make over the course of my rental, you're going to end up having to pay me several animals, even though it was only one animal. How can you have such a thing? So the Gemara is going to discuss how you might be able to have such a case. Okay, so let's begin. Amar Rava, again, this is the first of three answers to defend Rav Huna. Essentially, the kasha on Rav Huna, just to remind ourselves from yesterday, was as follows. That Rav Huna had said that even when a shomer does not have to take a shavua, he at least has to swear that he's not holding on to the item anymore, that the item is not in his rishus. So the Gemara brought a Mishnah, wasn't a price, it was a Mishnah, that had four different permutations of a guy who borrowed money and he gave a pikadon in exchange for that which he borrowed, and there was some dispute as to how much the loan was for, and how much the original pikadon was for, and how much the mashkon was worth. What the discrepancy was, and whether there was any discrepancy. So the Gemara's kasha was that if the Mishnah had assumed that we don't want the Malva to be the one taking a Shvua as to how much the Mashkon was actually worth, because if he takes a Shvua of how much we don't want the Lova to be the one taking a Shvua to how much the item was actually worth, because if the Lova takes such a Shvua and he says, oh, I swear it was worth $100, we're afraid the Malva, who actually was supposed to have the Mashkon, might pull out the Mashkon and say, oh yeah, look at it, and you see that it's worth not what the Lova said. So we don't allow the Lova to take the Shvua because we're afraid that the Malva might pull the Mashkon out afterwards. So the Kasha on Rav Huna was, well, wait a second, you Rav Huna hold that any time a Shomer loses an item, he at least has to swear that he doesn't have it anymore. Why are we afraid the Malva is going to pull the item out if he's already sworn that he doesn't have it anymore? Forget about making the Lova look bad, he's going to make himself look really, really bad if he swears, I swear I don't have this Mashkon anymore, it's gone, and then the second the Lova swears about what it's worth, the Malva pulls it out. So obviously that shouldn't be a concern. That was the Kasha on Rav Huna. So the Gemara has three answers. Answer number one, Amar Rava, that the Mishnah is talking about a case where he didn't take that Shavua that he doesn't have it anymore, because Sheish Edim Shenisrafa. We have Edim that it was burnt, that it was destroyed. So since there are Edim that the Mashkon was destroyed, even Rav Huna, who normally requires the Malva, who normally requires the Shomer to take a Shavua that he's no longer in possession of the item, that's only when we think he might be. But if you have Edim that swear that it's already destroyed, we're not going to make him take that Shavua, and therefore it's still reasonable to assume that since he's not taking the Shavua, he might pull it out and prove the Lova wrong. So says Mar, well, if we have Edim that it got burnt and destroyed, well then how does that whole concern even exist? The whole concern is that the Lova is going to swear how much it's worth, and then the Malva is going to say, oh yeah, here it is. Well, if we have Edim that it was already burnt, how's he going to pull it out and say, oh yeah, here it is? So Elam Rav Yosef, Sheyesh Edim Shenignava. No, the case is not that there are Edim that it was destroyed, there are Edim that it was stolen. So he's not going to have to swear he doesn't have it, because we know he doesn't have it, since there are Edim that it was stolen. But we're still concerned that as soon as the Lova swears how much that Mashkon was worth, the Malva's going to find it, and he's going to show it to us. So Sof Meichem Meisel, well, if it was stolen, where's he going to get it from? It was stolen. So says Mar Detaruch Meisel, he'll do an investigation, he'll find the ganav, he'll retrieve the item, and that's what we're afraid of, that the Lova is going to, the Malva doesn't have to swear that he doesn't have it because we have Edim that it was stolen from him. The Lova is going to swear how much that Mashkon was worth, and then the next day the Malva is going to say, look, I have it now, I managed to retrieve it, and you see that it's not worth what the Lova said it was worth. Ihachi, if that's the case, that's what we're worried about, Kimishtava Malva Nami Litrach Lova Valesi, even if the Malva is the one that's taking the Shavua as to how much it's worth, shouldn't I be equally concerned that the Lova will do an investigation and he'll find the item and he'll show that it's not worth what the Malva said? Meaning, just like we said, why would the Mishnah say that I don't want the Lova to swear to how much it's worth because the Malva might find it and show us that's not true? I should just by the same token, I should say, I don't want the Malva swearing how much it's worth because the Lova might find it. He might do an investigation, find the ganav, and show us how much it's really worth. Says Mar, Bishlam Malva Yadaman Ka'il V'Nafik Bebesev Azul V'Taruch Ma'isila. No, the Malva knows who he was, the one holding on to it when it got stolen. So he knows who was in and out of his house. It's much easier for him to do an investigation. He could think about, okay, where was I? Where were people? Who was coming into my house? Did I have a party? Did I have this? And then he'll figure out who was, check the security cameras. He'll figure it out in terms of his investigation, what happened in his own house. We're not worried that the Lova is going to find the ganav and retrieve the item, because the Lova has no idea who was in and out of the Malva's house. He doesn't have the kalim with which to conduct any sort of investigation. So there's no reason to be choshesh that the Lova is going to find the pikadon. So it turns out that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Malva never had to swear she'enu b'rishuso because there were edim that it was stolen, and so therefore you don't have to be choshesh that shema ain't of nothing, but he was just trying to buy it and he knew it wasn't for sale and he was just trying to keep it. No, we know that it was stolen, and still we have to be choshesh that maybe he's going to go out of his way to find the Pikadon and thereby contradict the Lova's Shavua, and that's why the Malda has to swear. So that is answer number one to the Kasha on Rav Huna. Abaye Omer, answer number two, that the Edim, that we could explain the Mishnah that Edim did not come and say that it was destroyed or stolen or anything like that, and therefore the Malda does have to swear that it was Eina Bereshuso, and still the Chachamim say that we have to flip the Shavua about how much it was worth on the Malva, because Gzeira Shemi Yiton the Yomerlo, we're afraid that the Malva is going to say to the Lova Achar Shavua Mitzasiya, I found it after the Shavua. Meaning, what was our whole Kasha on Rav Huna? Once you're making the Malva swear that he doesn't have it, why are you concerned that if the Lova swears as to how much it's worth, the Malva is going to show me the item and he's going to say, now I have it? He just swore that he doesn't have it. There's no reason to be concerned that he's going to say, now I have it. So the answer is, yes, there is, because he's going to swear, I don't have it. Then the Lova is going to swear how much it's worth. Then the Malva is going to say, oh, look at that, I found it. Meaning, at the time that I swore, I didn't have it. I didn't have it. But now I found it. I wasn't lying to you. And now he's going to show that the Lova's Shavua was inaccurate. And that's why we're hofich the Shavua onto the Malva. That's answer number two. Rav Ashi Amar, answer number three. Zenishba v'zenishba. No, the Mishnah never meant to say that the Lova doesn't swear and that we flip the Shavua onto the Malva. No, they both swear. The Malva has to swear that he doesn't have it. The Lova swears as to its value. That wasn't the question. Zenishba sheiner b'reshuso. The Malva swears that he doesn't have it. Zenishba kama yeshava. The Lova swears how much the Mashkon was worth. V'hachi kamar. What the Mishnah meant to say is, mi nishba tchila. Of these two Shavuos, who's the first one to take a Shavua? And that's what the Mishnah says, that Malva nishba tchila, that we'd rather the Malva swear first that he doesn't have it, because if the Lova swears first that about how much it's worth, we're afraid that prior to the Malva swearing that he doesn't have it, he's going to take out the item and he's going to say, look, I have it and it's not worth what you said it's worth. Shemi yishava zev yotzi alas, because we're afraid that the Lova is going to swear and then the Malva is going to take the Pikadon out and show it to us. And therefore, we tell the Malva, you got to swear first that you don't have it. Once you swear that you don't have it, then we'll make the Lova swear as to how much it's actually worth. The Ritva points out that Lechori, even without this din that the Malva has to swear first at Tzeinah Bereshuso, because of the concern that he might pull to take out the item after the Lova swears, it still would have made sense that the Malva should swear first that it's Eina Bereshuso. Meaning, why not? So the Ritva says, no, there's a Havamina that a Dafka has to be done the other way, because there's Makom to say that since his Shavua is only Midrabanan, whereas the Shavua Halova is a Shavua Midna Torah, meaning the Malva Shavua that it's Eina Bereshuso, Rav Huna said it in, that he's got to take such a Shavua, it's Eina Bereshuso, Midrabanan, because we're afraid, Shema Einav Nasanba, that maybe he's just trying to buy something that's not for sale. Whereas the Shavua that the Lova is taking is a Shavua Smad Mixas. It's a Shavua Daraisa. So I would have assumed that the Shavua Min HaTorah comes before any Shavua Midrabanan. So that's the Chiddush, that we're able to be mocked in the Shavua Samalva to the Shavua Salova, even though there's a good Svara to say that the Lova Shavua should have come first, since it's a Shavua Min HaTorah that comes before a Shavua Midrabanan. Okay, so now the Gemara challenges Rav Huna again. Rav Huna Bar Tachlifa, Mishmei Drava Amar, Reisha de Seifa. Remember, there are four permutations in the Mishnah in the case of the Mashkon. That the question was the Mashkon that we had four cases in the Mishnah. One was that the first half was where he says Selahu v'sicha alav, that the Malva says to the Lova that I lent you a Selah and on the Mashkon v'shekel hayashava, and the Mashkon was only worth a shekel, and the Lova says back, no, Selah v'sicha alav is Selah hayashava, that the Mashkon was worth exactly the same amount as the loan. But then the Reisha the Seifa was, the second case was Selah v'sicha alav, the Malva says, look, I lent you a Sela, you gave me back a Mashkon worth a shekel. And the Lova says, no, Sela hu v'sina alav, shlosh dinarim ha'yishava, I gave you a Mashkon that was worth three quarters of the amount amount of the loan. So he's a moda b'miktsas. The lov is moda that he still owes a little more money to be mashlim the discrepancy, but that the discrepancy is not quite as big as the mother claims it is. So reisha de seifa, the reisha de seifa of the Mishnah, tiyufta is a. I'm sorry, that's the seifa de reisha. The reisha de seifa is the case where. Sorry about that. Is where the case where he said sela hilvi sani alav, where the lova says to the malva that that you had loaned me a sela, but the mashkon that I gave you back was shnayim ayeshava. I gave you back a very expensive mashkon that was worth more than the money that you loaned me. Va'alom, and the malva had said no sela visichalav. I had lent you a sela, sela ayeshava. The mashkon you gave me back was worth exactly what I loaned you, and therefore we're even right now. So the lova is claiming you still owe me money because you lost the mashkon, and the malva is claiming now we're even because I lost the mashkon. So now, Rav Huna bar Tachliv Mishmei Darava Amar Reisha de Seifa, that case where the lova is claiming to be owed money and the malva is claiming that we are now even is tiyufta. The Rav Huna is a tiyufta on the chiddush of Rav Huna. Sela v'sani lav shayim ha'yeshava v'alomer lo kiela sela v'sicha lav sela ha'yeshava pater. That was the case where the lova claims you still owe me money because I give you mashkon worth way more than the loan, and the malva says no, I owe you nothing, we're even now. So we said that he's pater because it's a kofar hakol v'emisa l'Rav Huna. But if the malva, if Rav Huna is right that a malva has to swear always that the item is no longer in his rishus, what do you mean he's pater? He has to swear anyway that he doesn't have the item in his rishus. So migo d'mishtava malva sheina b'rishuso l'shtav nami al gugl shvua kama yeshava. Once he's taking the shvua anyway that it's not in his rishus, can't we then impose a gilgul shvua on him? That granted, he's a kofar hakol, and a kofar hakol generally doesn't have to take a shvua. But if he's anyway taking a shvua, so we often will be megalgal a second shvua on him. So if you hold like Rav Huna that any time a person lost a pikadon, he anyway has to take a shvua that he doesn't have it anymore. So let's be megalgal a shvua on him about how much it was actually worth. So answers Gemara Amravashi Amrisul Shmeita Kamed Rav Kana. We said the sugya over in front of Rav Kana. And he responded to Hebima Amino that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the Lova trusts the Malva that it's not in his Rishus. So there's no room for a Gilgul Shvua because there's no Shvua that gets off the ground in the first place. Meaning, as far as the real Shvua, he doesn't have to take because it's a Kofar Akol. So the Malva is not going to have to take that Shvua. What about the Shvua that it's the Einu B'Rishuso? That's only because we're Choshesh that the Malva might be holding on to it, trying to buy something that's not for sale. But if the Lova says, I trust you, I know you're not holding on to it, so then he's not going to make him take a Shavua. So if the Lova trusts the Malva anyway, he doesn't take that Shavua that it's Neinu Bereshusa, and Mimela, there's no room for a Gilgul. So it says, well, what do you mean he trusts him? They're arguing about how much the item was worth, so obviously they don't trust each other, because the Lova is saying, I gave you a Rolex, it was worth twice as much as the loan that I made from you, and the Malva said, you gave me a fake Rolex, and it was worth exactly the $10 loan that I had. A Rolex would be worth more than twice $10. But he said it was worth exactly the loan that I gave you. So obviously they don't trust each other. So no, it's not that the Lova doesn't trust the Malva, but Lokim Lebikave. The Lova assumes that the Malva doesn't have the expertise or the knowledge of this particular item to be able to know how much it was worth. He thinks the Malva is being honest, that he actually thinks it was worth less than it was, but it's actually worth more than the Malva thinks it's worth. So I don't think he's holding on to it. I don't think he's dishonest. I just think he doesn't know. Well, why doesn't the Malva trust the Lova? After all, it's the Lova's item. He probably knows the value of his own item better than the Malva does. So it says, we're talking about a case where the Malva doesn't trust the Lova. So the ukimta we're making in the Mishnah is that the Lova doesn't think the Malva is a ganav. I'm not going to make you take a shavur that it's in a Bereshuso because I don't think it's Bereshuso. I don't think you're holding on to it. I just think you don't know how to assess the value of the item. Whereas the Malva thinks the Lova is a liar, and you're claiming that you had this item that was worth so much money, it wasn't worth any. You know how much it's worth, and you're lying about how much it's worth. So it says Gemara, Umayshal Lova Demehemle Malva, Umayshal Malva Demehemle Lova. Why would we make such an ukimta that there's distrust in one direction and there's plenty of trust in the other direction, is that like a natural assumption that a lova trusts a malva and a malva doesn't trust a lova? Says, well, yeah, that is a natural assumption, that people have an irrational or perhaps rational trust of people who have more money than them. Lova mekayim bebe malva, the lova will apply to the malva, the pasuk in Mishlei, tumas yesharim tancheim, that if you see a person who HaKadosh Baruch Hu has blessed with great wealth, then you know he's a trustworthy person, because otherwise HaKadosh Baruch Hu would not have given him that bracha. So since the malva, by definition, the malva is the one that's lending money, so he's the ashir over here, so the lova has this natural trust for the malva. I wonder if there's some psychological thing to that people trust those who have more money, because they assume, yeah, they know what they're doing with money. I don't know. Malva mekayim bebelova v'selef bogdim yishadeim, and the malva will assume about the lova that he's not a trustworthy person, and since he needs to borrow money, he's a poor person, he shouldn't be trusted with about how much the mashkon was worth. So that's a normal ukimta to make, that the lova trusts the malva, but the malva is not trusting the lova. Okay, now the Gemara tells a maisa, and through this maisa we're going to introduce a new sugya of Shuma Hadar. Maisa is as follows: Hu gavra da'afki kipi gabe chavrei. There was a guy who had given as a pikadon some jewelry to his friend. So Amalei, the mafkid, said to the shomer, "Havli kipi." Okay, I'd like to retrieve the jewelry that I gave you. So Amalei, the shomer, said back, "Lo yadana heicha usvinu." I'd love to give it back to you. I have no idea where I put it. Meaning, I put it away. I have no idea where. So also the kamei, the Rav Nachman, they came to Rav Nachman. Amalei, so Rav Nachman said, to say that you don't know where you put it, that is the definition of negligence. It's your job to remember where you put it. Zil shalim. And therefore, you need to go and pay for this item. We're not going to give you like extra time to go look for it. Lashon l'shulchan aruch in Chosh HaMishpatim Reish Sadi Aleph is, Einu yochol lomer lo, hamtein ad sha'avakesh ve'emtza ve'achzir lach, elechayiv l'shalim miyad. The guy who owns the jewelry and who gave it to you to watch has every right to ask for it now. You don't have the right to say, "Oh, just give me a few days to turn my house upside down and to look for it and to find it." No, he has every right to demand it right now. The idea that he doesn't know where it is, the Ritva writes that even if you put it in a makom mishtamer, he knows that he put it in a safe place, it's still called pshia, because it's pshia to not remember. Meaning, it's not that he was posheya in the shmira. The shmira may have been a great shmira, but he was posheya in not remembering what the shmira was. The Meiri understands differently. He says, no, the pshia is because he has no idea where he put it. So there's a chance that he put it in a place that wasn't a safe place. But if you were to remember that I definitely put it in a safe place, I just do not remember which safe place I put it in, then you wouldn't call that a pshia. Pashtus is like the Ritva, that his lack of remembering is itself a pshia. So anyway, lo shilem, he didn't pay the money. So Azul Rav Nachman agve la padimine. So Rav Nachman said, okay, now we have to confiscate property to pay for it. So he took away his palace or whatever, his house or something. So the sof ishtakach kipi v'ayakar. And then at some later point, they found the jewelry, and by that time the jewelry had gone up in value. So now he made out okay, meaning by having to give up his property to pay back for that jewelry, so that was worth whatever it was, $100. Now by the time they found the jewelry was worth $1,000. So he's like, okay, you can keep the property that you took, and I'm happy to keep the jewelry. So I'm Rav Nachman, Hadri kipi l'maray v'hadra apadna l'mara. Now everything's got to go back. The jewelry's got to go back to the original owner, and the apadna's got to go back to the original owner. So Amarava havi yasivna kamed Rav Nachman. Rav says, I was sitting in front of Rav Nachman when he was paskening this halacha, upirkin ha-mafkid hava, and we happened to have been learning perek ha-mafkid v'armilei, and because I was holding in the sugya, so I asked Rav Nachman on his psak, shilim v'lo ratzu lishava, that we learned in our Mishnah, that if a shomer pays because he doesn't want to have to swear in order to get off the hook from paying, right? So he just pays for it, and therefore he thereby acquires the pikadon. So now we say, so now it belongs to him, right? We said now if he gets, if you find the ganav, the kefel, and the dalet vehei is going to go to the shomer because he had paid for it now. He became the owner of it. So we should say over here also that when the guy paid for the rings, for the whatever it was, for the jewelry, and now they went up in value, so he benefited.
benefits from it. He should benefit from that increase in value of the jewelry. So how can you say that that everything goes back? V'lo hadali, and he did not respond to my question. He did not respond, not because he didn't have a response. He didn't respond because he wasn't even go race the question. Sometimes the Rebbe doesn't respond because he doesn't have a response, and sometimes he doesn't respond because I want you to think about that a little bit longer. I mean, you just give it a little bit of thought, and you'll see where you're wrong. So he says, then I gave it some thought. And he did right by not responding to me, because my time, what's the reason what's the reason they didn't respond? Because the two cases are not comparable at all. In the din of the Mishnah, the mafkid is makna to the shomer, the pikadon, if the shomer pays for it, because the shomer is being so kind that he's not even being matriach, the mafkid, to go to Beis Din. He's just paying for it. So yeah, I'm makna to you any further rights that you're going to have in that item, if you're going to make my life so easy that the second you don't have it, you're just going to pay for it. So I'm very happy with such a deal. But over here, by the lost jewelry, the shomer was matriach the mafkid to come to Beis Din, and they had a hold in Torah, and the psak was against him. So I'm not just being makna to you all the rights in my stuff just after you schlep me to a Beis Din to deal with such a case. So that's the That's the reason why they're not comparable. The Tosfos points out, l'chora, there's another reason why they're not comparable. I mean, the comparison was off anyway. I mean, even in the case in our Mishnah, where we said that the guy, instead of swearing, he just decides to pay right away, so now he's entitled to the kefil, he's entitled to the dal vei. But is he really the owner of the item? We said he's not entitled to giza vavoda, to the giza and the vlados of the animal, meaning any giza that it had, that he's not entitled to. So we explained, because a shevach that comes mineu bay, I'm not makna to you. Yes, I'm going to be makna to you from the time you become the shomer, on the condition that you pay me later instead of swearing. I'm going to be makna to you right away, any rights to kefil and dal vehei, but I'm not makna to you giza, I'm not makna to you the vlados. So you don't really become the owner. So what's this more like when jewelry goes up in value? Is that more like giza and vlados, or is that more like kefel and dalet vehei? So Tos says, I would have thought it's more like giza and vlados. So Tos says, no, you see from this discussion that's more like kefel and dalet vehei, that an increase in value in the item itself is not a recognizable growth from the animal, from the item, whereas giza and vlados are a recognizable growth from the item. So recognizable growth from the goof of the item, that I'm not makna to you, but I'm going to be makna to you an increase in value. Anyway, so says Gemara, the Rav Nachman's psak in the end of the day was that everything goes back to the original owner. So the Maimer, the Savar of Nachman, the Shuma Hadar, maybe this is a raya that Rav Nachman holds, that whenever we assess karka, the value of karka, in order to use it to pay up a chov, that it will go back if the person who owed the money comes up with the money. That as soon as he comes up with the money, he can return the money and say, now I'd like my property back. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a raya that Rav Nachman holds Shuma Hadar, because even if that were not the case, it's just that the lover is not able to take the shiny hasam. The case is different. The case of Rav Nachman was different. The Shuma Batos Hava, to Kavah Kipi Meikara. The whole Shuma, the whole assessment we did was all a tatus, because the jewelry was there the whole time. If Beis Din would have known where the jewelry was, they never would have done the Shuma, and therefore the whole collection was viewed as a tautless, as opposed to normally where a guy just doesn't have money to pay, so the Shuma is done not the tautless, the Shuma is done mindfully and willfully, and then later the fellow comes up with money, later the lova comes up with money and he decides he wants to pay money. Maybe in such a case we're going to say Shuma lo hadar. It's only in this case where the whole thing was betautless that Rav Nachman says that it's hadar. So the Gemara brings a machlokas about how long we say Shuma Hadar for. Let's assume that we say Shuma Hadar. Does that go on forever? So Amri Nardai in Narda, they said Shuma Hadar Atresa Yarchishata, that it lasts for 1 year, for 12 months, and once 12 months pass and the guy has already received the property more than 12 months ago, and he's had the property in his possession for more than 12 months, you cannot then later come up with the money and get the property back. He says, it's interesting what you quote from the Nahardai, that all the Chacham in Narda said. That he said, I'm from Narda, and it's really Shuma Hadal Yolam, and I happen to hold Shuma Hadal Yolam. So don't don't speak in the name of all Nahardian rabbis, because I'm from Narda, and I hold that it goes back to the Olam. V'hilchusa shuma hadu li'olam. And we talk a paskin like a meimer that it's hadu li'olam mishum shnemar v'asisa yashavatov. This is considered something that's Yashav Tov, to return a property back to the original owner of the property and to take money in its stead. Meaning you have no connection to that property. When you lent the guy money, you were not hoping to get property back. You were hoping to get money back. It happened to be he didn't have any money, so he had to give you property. So the right thing to do, the Yashav Tov, is that if he ever comes up with money, which is what you wanted in the first place anyway, so then you take the money and you give him back his property. So that is the concept of Shuma Hadar, and that's what we seem to paskin, that Shuma Hadar. So says Gemara, but I'll bring you four cases where it's not so pashut. Pshita shamalei lebalchov vazaliyu v'shamalei lebalchov didei. What if they did a shuma for a balchov to collect, and then the balchov who collected also owed money to other people, so they did a shuma of that property again for him to pay off his own chavos. So we say to him, lo advad megavardos minei. You're no better than the guy that you're coming on behalf of. Meaning if the Balchov who received the karka for the money that was owed him now gave it to someone else who he owed money to, so the original Bala karka, once he comes up with the money, can take it away from the person who ended up with the property. Because you could say, look, the same way my Balchov, the guy that I owed the money to, would have to take this money and give me back my property, you have to take the money and give back the property. So you have to give me back the property. Second case, Zabna, if the Balchov who they assessed the karka for had sold it, or Orta, he was morish it to his child, the other matana, or he gave it as a matana, then we're not going to say Shuma Hadar. Because the whole concept of Shuma Hadar is when you engaged in this transaction, all you were looking for is money. So you were hoping to get money back. You got the land back, so now take the money back that you always wanted. But if someone yarshined it, if someone bought it, so that person did not want money. They wanted land, and that's why they bought it. They bought land. So then you can't tell that person, here, just take money back. No, they want the land, and therefore we don't say Shuma Hadar in that case. Third case, Shamala Li'isha, they make an assessment of the karka for money that was owed to a woman, in Siva, and then she got married. So now the husband has rights to her properties. Oshamu mina di isha, or a woman owed money and they did an assessment of property that she owned to pay back vitin siva, and then she got married to Mesa and she died. Bal benichse ishto lokeach havi. The chacham considered the bal as far as his wife's nechasim as a lokeach, not like a yoresh, and therefore if they were shamu li isha and they collected karka as payment to the isha and she died and the husband Yarshin that karka, and now they want to be poda that karka from the husband. They want to give him cash and say, give us the karka back. Lomei hadar. He does not have to return that karka because he's like a lokeach of that karka. And in the reverse, lomei adrinu lei. In the other case, where they assess from the woman and she gets married and she dies and the husband yarshins her, and now he wants to return the money and to take the karka back, so we don't have to give the husband that karka back, and he can't say yorishani, and therefore I want to be poda it in her place. No, he's a lokeach, and he has no zuchus to be poda that karka. This was one of the takanos of the Bezen HaGadol, and one of their travels. They went to Eser Golios, so one of their travels was in Usha, where they made a number of takanos. So one of the takanos was if a woman sells nichse miluk while her husband is alive, umesa, and then she dies, the Baal is entitled to that karka from the lekuchos, because the chachamim give him a din of a lokeach, not a din of a yoresh. Meaning if he had a din of a yoresh, whoever bought the property could say, sorry, I purchased it before you ever yarshined it. You only yarshin it when she dies. I purchased it before she died. But we don't treat the Baal as a yoresh, we treat him as a lokeach. And we say from the moment he got married, he was a lokeach on that property, and therefore the person that she sold it to is not entitled to it. it. Fourth permutation, agbe ihu, if the lova, they didn't assess the value, the basin never had to assess the value of the karka, the lova himself just agbe ihu b'chovo. He just gave this karka. I owe you money, I don't have the money, just take this karka. And he, you know, and the person accepts it. So pliga baravach ravina. So that's a machlokas, whether we say shuma hadar or not. Chadam or hadra, one says hadra, v'chadam or lo hadra, the other one says shuma's lo hadar in that case. Madyam lo hadra, the one that says that it doesn't go back, that this is a real sale because he chose to do this on his own. He chose to give you that property. So once he chose to give you that property, that's it. That's the end of it. It's yours. But the one that says that even that would have to be given back, who wasn't a sale of the property. No, it was just because he was embarrassed to go to Beis Din. But certainly it would be like any other Shuma where it would have to be returned once he comes up with the money. So the Gemara explains, when does the Achilles, when is the Zman of Achilles Peros on the Karka that Beis Din had collected? Me'emas Achol Peri, the guy who they collected the Karka on behalf of, when is he allowed to eat the Peros of that Karka? Rabbar Mikimatya Adrachta Liyade, from the second he has a Shtar Adrachta in his hand, meaning 90 days from the time of the Psak Din, Beis Din writes the Toveya a Shtar that wherever you could find properties of the guy of the Lova, you're allowed to go and confiscate that property, and they give him this shtar. So from that time, he's allowed to eat the peros of that karka. Abayi Amar Edom Chsum of Zachlo, the Edom that sign on the shtar adrachta are zocha that shtar to him even before he ever has it, even before he has his hands on it. As soon as that adrachta was signed, Rav Amar Mikishalimu Yimei Achrasta, that it's after the days of Hachraza that he's able to eat peros, but not before that, because even after he has the shtar adrachta, he has to look for the nechasim of the lova, and then he has to go to Beis Din and they have to announce about this property so that they can get a basic price of the property. So it's only after those days of hachraza are over that he's entitled to the peros of that property. So that's three-way machlokas, when he's entitled to the peros of the property, when he has the adrachta, even before that when the edim signed the adrachta, or way after that when they finish doing the hachraza. New Mishnah. If someone rents a cow from a friend and then he lends it out to somebody else, umesa kedarka, and while the shoel has it, it dies kedarka. So yishava asocher shemesa kedarka. The socher just has to swear to the maskir that it died in a normal way, and therefore it's an ones, and the socher is pater from onsim. So he's not going to have to pay the original bialim anything. But the shoel is chayiv in onsim. So vashol yishalim the socher. The shoel will pay the socher. So I'm Rabbi Yossi keitzar alo soschor b'proso shel chav. How could that be that I'm going to make money off of someone else's cow? I rented the cow, I lent it out to someone else, and now I'm going to make money off it? No, el taxer par lebailim. You have to pay. If the shoel is going to pay for it, he pays the original owner. He pays the maskir, but he doesn't pay the socher. What was the kinyan that the socher did on this para? Meaning within the sheet of the chachamim, that the socher actually can make money on it, that he's the owner. So b'shvua, it's the shvua that he made to the maskir that it was mesa kedarka. V'namely maskir the socher dal ant v'dal shvo seich v'anam eshtin l'din abadei shoel. If the maskir were to say to the socher, you know what, I don't need your shvua, in fact I don't need you at all, let me just deal directly with the shoel and we'll figure this out between us, so he should be able to and let him pay me for my cow. You think that's how he's kona through the shvua? Mishas miso dekani ushvua. No, he's kona the second it dies, and it's the shvua is just to calm the maskir down that don't worry, I wasn't posheya in the animal. So it's not the shvua that he's kona with, because if it were, then the maskir could just say don't do a shvua because I still want it to belong to me, so no shvua, you stay away, and then he'll get paid from the shoel. So the Gemara's response is it's not the shvua that he's kona with. So then the Gemara says, I come up with a crazy case. Sometimes the Bailim is going to end up paying several paros to the socher himself. How could that happen? He rents the cow for 100 days. And then the Bailim borrows it back for Tishin Yomei, for 90 days. And then Hadra Agrimine, and then the Socher goes and rents it back for Timnin Yomei, for 80 days. And then the Bailim borrows it back for Shivin Yomei, for 70 days. And then Umeisa Betoch Yomei Shei Lasa, and it dies during the time of the second loan. The Akol Sheilu Sheilu Mechayiv Chadapara. So a Shol is Chayiv Inonsim. He's a double shovel. So since he's a double shovel, he has to pay back a para for each she'ela, for each period of she'ela that he's in middle of. And it's going to turn out that the socher is entirely potter, because the socher is potter from onsim. So when I rented it from you, no matter how many times I rented it from you, I'm potter for paying for it. But you're going to have to pay me a cow because you had borrowed it back from me twice, and therefore you're going to have to pay it back. So Amir Vachem Yidif the Ravina Michti Chad the Pari. It's one cow. I live Afka Afka Meskiris Vayel Shela Afka Meshela Vayel Meskiris. It just its status changes, but you're not going to have to pay several cows. Amle Misa the Pari Beino Dinei Leachi. Well, is the Pari still around that you could say that? If the Pari was around, he'd be Pata Lagarmi, and he'd only have to give him that Pari. But the Pari is not around, so he has to pay for each one. Marbar Avashi Amar Einlo Alein El Shtei Paros. He only has two. He only owes him two paros, like Rav Acham Yidifti said, that you give the chadda de sheila, one para that he owes him for when he was a sholus chayv ba'onsin, chadda de schirus, and one para for the two schirios that he did, that's going to do malacha for the 20 days that he still owes him. Shum sheila achasi, v'shum schira achasi. So each one is assessed separately, that since one para is just borrowed twice, so he has to only pay for that one para, and the schirus, he only has to give him 20 days of schirus. The para that he gets in return for the she'ela, the socher is going to be kona entirely and will be able to keep the schirus. And whatever schirus he still owes him, whatever amount of days he still owes him, he'll give him another cow to work that amount of days, and then he'll return that cow after that amount of days. Okay, but from tomorrow we'll pick up with Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah. Have a good day, everyone.